Amiya Campbell, welcome back to Geological.
So happy to be back.
Good to have you. We had so much fun last time. Yeah. We just had to do it again.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. So we're just talking for a minute or two before rolling tape about how so many people have stories about that first 5 years of practice. And, you know, it's hard. Everyone kind of complains about it. And there's often a lot of talk about, well, it's so unfair. So many people are not practicing after 5 years. That first 5 years is so critical in so many ways. And it seems to me so often that it's not just an acupuncture practice. The first 5 years of anything, especially if you're doing a new business, is going to be hard. And I'm not sure there's any way around that.
It's interesting. Of course, my head is in this place right now because my son is turning one on Monday. But think about all of the development that happens in the first 5 years of childhood. I always call our first business when we opened our own practice, my wife and I, as our first child, right? And then Align Modern Health is my second child. And then Rumi is my third child. And he just happens to have curls. So I like him a little more. Yeah. So, I mean, how would that be any different, right? You know, there's so much developmentally happening for children. It's the same thing. You're figuring things out, right? And you're making mistakes and learning from them. I mean, I watch Rumi hit his head in the wall constantly. He's going to stop eventually, right?
Right. Right. Well, you know, one of the things that I think comes up is a sense of insecurity. We're starting off with something. We're supposed to look polished and professional and competent, but my God, we don't really have experience. How can we truly have a sense of security until we've like worked through some stuff? It seems like insecurity is a big elephant that no one really talks about.
Yeah, it's so pervasive. I encounter it a fair amount because I do, well, one, I'm a teacher, I'm faculty, so I encounter it a fair amount with my students. And I really try to teach them that we're actually in the perfect position to get you past insecurity, right? In fact, to practice, you have to be grounded. And so there's such simple things that you can do to kind of get you past that. I think the other thing to beat insecurity is, you know, find security, which is, how do you do that? You study your butt off, right? You work really hard and don't forget that. I always tell folks when people ask you, how long have you been practicing? Well, how long have you been practicing? Probably the second semester of school, you started seeing patients, right? There it is. That's how long you've been practicing. So I think, you know, instead of saying, oh, I just got my license. Well, yeah, nobody asked you when you got your license, right? They asked you how long you've been practicing. And in fact, if you are, you know, taking full advantage of what you have, if you're paying attention to the patients, if you're paying attention to the energy in the room, if you're paying attention to the interns you're following, that's practice. You're learning things. I mean, I still remember things that happened probably in the third or fourth week of clinic that still impact me. And I think about to this day when I'm treating patients, oh, pay attention to see if you start seeing a shift in the color of their legs after I put in stomach 36, things like that, right? Things that I noticed as an observer. There's so many different ways to deal with insecurity, but truthfully, that's the biggest one. Like, have faith in what you spent all this time and money doing, right? What the hell were you just doing if you don't believe in it?
I know for myself, I remember when I first got out of school, I was relying more on what my teachers said than my own experience. Because, you know, in school, we learn to feel the pulse, we look for changes in the tongue, coloration, like you were saying, do the legs change with stomach 36? There's all the things that we know for ourselves. So often there's like a teacher's voice in the back of your head going, it's got to be like this, it's got to be like that. And so there comes this time when you're actually on your own. It's like that internal system has to be yours, not somebody else's. And it has to become your voice, not your teacher's voice.
Well, I love hearing my teacher's voice, actually, because it reminds me sort of a guidepost, kind of directs me in this particular direction. But then it has to be me. My teacher's not the one putting the needles in them, right? My teacher's not the one communicating with them. Although, I'm sure you encounter this a lot, but I encounter it more now than I did when I was a younger practitioner, is that I sometimes things come out of my mouth. I'm like, who was that? Like, where did that come from? Right. And I feel like I'm almost channeling like my teacher or something I read or something like that. Right. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think that reality is teaching, and I always tell my students this, I'm like, you need to believe in what I'm saying, but you need to test it too. You know, this isn't the gospel. I mean, if you believe in that, right? I'm not a guru. You better question me. And I tell my patients that too. And it's usually the questions that challenge me to really be solid on what I'm doing and what I'm saying. I think one of the things that got me out of that rut of insecurity, although candidly, that's not really my personality, to be honest.
You just tend to be more confident.
I am confident, but I also equip myself to make it easier to be confident, right? I was lucky enough to shadow my mentor for 2 years while I was in school. That, again, when I'm thinking about sort of my how long I've been practicing, when I walk out of school and open my business, I'd been practicing in school, and then I'd also been shadowing him, right? So it felt like even more years of practice. And then I'd gone to symposium four times. You know, I'd done CEUs, like all of those things are building your practice. I surrounded myself with amazing acupuncturists. All of those things are building your confidence just to communicate about the medicine more and get more perspectives. But then in the end, it's my brain that's integrating it. We have to own it. From a confidence perspective, yeah, I do what I can to feel more confident. When I go into a meeting with an unknown person, I know as much as I can, and then that's all I can do. And then after that, it's let's see what comes our way, and let's figure it out. And that's where the grounding piece comes in. Because if you're grounded, anything can come your way, and you'll be fine.
Tell me more about grounding. You know, sometimes I hear phrases like that, well, ground yourself. And I'm going, yo, what the hell are you actually talking about? What do you mean ground myself? Sometimes it helps to know what that means for somebody. I think we probably all have different ways that we kind of root ourselves into that something that does allow us to hear patients say something and we go, that's the key right there, right? Or maybe we even say something and go, oh my God, I didn't know I knew that about them. Talk to me about grounding, how you do it for yourself.
There's so many different ways I kind of do it. But truthfully, remember, my background is in physical chemistry. I spent a lot of time in electronics labs. So grounding to me actually means like that third plug, right? I think about that. For me, I visualize that in some senses. Another way I do it is a really easy technique that probably the first intern that I shadowed in school taught me, where you really just put your feet down and you just start to feel like the roots of the tree going around your legs and really just connecting with the ground. And you start to actually feel yourself, you know, rooted, right? So it's more of a kind of rooting, which I think is similar to a Qigong technique that I learned in school as well. And I remember my Qigong teacher, she's amazing. You should interview her, actually. Her name is Marie-France Collin. She's just phenomenal. But she's this tiny little French lady. And she would ground herself. And then she'd say, all right, somebody try to pick me up, right? And she felt like 10 tons. And she's, what, I don't know, 125 pounds or something, right? You know, definitely learned it from a Qigong perspective as well. And then a newer kind of way that I've been taking it, because of course we always evolve as we practice, is something that I learned from one of my other teachers, Dr. Jill Blakeway. She talks about it in her energy medicine book about the way that she grounds, and she almost sends like a cord down in like deep into the center. So they're all different kind of visualizations. But what I like about her, the way she talked about it, because this is sort of what I've been doing, but it had never really come into my understanding before that I was doing it, is sort of when you are grounded, you're opening up sort of that pole on the top of your head. You're almost opening up Du 20 to sort of that Tian, and you're making that connection between heaven, human, and earth. So she talks a little bit about that, but that's kind of how I always felt. And that's where I'm sitting there channeling. I'm like, who is this? Like that was so damn articulate, Lamia. Like, that wasn't you.
This is a very curious phenomena. I experience this a lot in my practice as well. And it never happens if I'm trying, but it shows up in those moments when, actually, I'm not trying. It just shows up in those moments of being attentive in some kind of a way where the patient may say something or I may say something. In a way, it doesn't matter who says it. What matters is that it was said and it was heard. And it's not like a transaction from one person to another. It's like both practitioner and patient kind of suddenly get this, oh, there's this. It's a whole different thing.
Right. It's that sort of resonance idea, right?
It's a resonance kind of thing.
Yeah, where you're suddenly, oh, we're exactly on the same wavelength, right? And all of a sudden, things are pouring out of your mouth, things are pouring out of their mouth. And you're like, where did that come from? Because the nature of my job, because I hire folks and bring them onto the team, part of my job is training them. And so they inevitably shadow me for at least a day during their training. And I think it's always fun. And I always ask them about it. You know, did you see that? Did you see that like spark that happened? I think it's really cool for them as amazing clinicians already, to be able to witness that externally, right? Also, part of my job is shadowing other clinicians. So seeing that in them as well is really cool. And it does, it feels like a spark. It, you know, this is at a quantum level, right? So we can't actually see it, but can we see it? I don't know. I feel like more and more I'm seeing this stuff. So it could be because my Liverian's getting weaker and I'm seeing spots, but who knows?
Well, I also know that you have a background in quantum mechanics from our previous conversation. How would you say this quantum field idea comes into what we're just talking about here, where something gets said and it really, it's like the feeling in the room shifts? Or maybe, in, I know for myself, in my mind, all of a sudden, a diagnosis or a perspective on this patient will just pop into being in a completely formed way.
Yeah, it's a really cool phenomenon. I remember the first couple of times it happened, I didn't believe it. I was like, what's going on? No, come on. It was just sort of, I had to put in the time and I got the information. That's not it though. You're absolutely right. And I think it all comes back down to this concept of resonance, which is a well-known kind of concept in the quantum mechanics world. And like I said, I think Jill's book is really helpful explaining it in a way to lay people, but also to acupuncturists. She can kind of go into it much better than I can. But from my perspective, it's just sort of atomically, we're suddenly on the same level, right? So when you think of quantum mechanics and sort of like the different valences, let's say, of electrons, I don't know how, tell me if this is just weird and not comprehensible, but.
I mean, we'll give it a try. I was the kind of person who did not study sciences that much when I was in high school. I was more like on the arts and, you know, that kind of side of things. If you can explain it to me, then probably the rest of the listeners will understand it as well, because I got a pretty elementary level of this kind of stuff. So let's have at it.
Gotcha. Okay. The idea is that as energy comes into the equation, an electron will move from one quantum level to the next. That's how it gets quantized, right? It's almost like the energy of the room or the energy of the conversation is hitting, and now suddenly they were at a different level and now they're at the same level as us. This happens if you've ever studied kind of mysticism, like Sufism. There's these concepts of sort of moving to the next level. And to me, I visualize it in that way. But again, that's my frame of reference, right? That's what I studied. For you, maybe, I don't know if you're into painting or poetry or whatever, but that's the language that you will communicate in. That's how you will probably see it in your head. But to me, I literally see like the diagrams that I studied in college, or I have this, you know, quantum mechanics for babies book for Rumi, because I'm just trying to indoctrinate early. And I see like the really sweet drawings that they have there. It's almost like you're here, I'm here, and then boom, we're at the same level. It's a really cool feeling, and you know it. And then suddenly things are just streaming back and forth. It's almost imperceptible of who's who, right? And I think there's a part of that that's so powerful in healing, because, or, you know, like correcting imbalances or whatever you want to call it. I don't love the idea of calling us healers, but when we're at their level, and at so many different ways we can talk about that, right? But when we're at their level, suddenly we're able to communicate with them at a deeper level internally as well, right? So it's not just, hey, you know, I think you should think about removing gluten and dairy. You know, suddenly it's permeating them at a much, you know, at a cellular level almost, where you can actually affect change. And then I think you throw a couple of needles in there and you got a party.
Yeah. I know for myself that there are times when I'm sitting doing that interview portion with the patient, and it doesn't quite feel like we're in sync, right? Often it feels more like I'm pulling teeth. I'm trying to get some information. I can't really get it. For whatever reason, I just don't feel like I'm connected. And then at a certain point, not always, right, but on a good day, that thing will happen like you just talked about, where it's like, I'm not trying to extract something from them. They're not trying to either push something toward me or hold something back, but there's just like click. You know, it sounds so silly, but it's true. It's like on the same wavelength. It's like all of a sudden, kind of get each other, right? That's when nonverbal cues like all of a sudden super make sense. And it's like you can hear the things that they're trying not to tell you,
mm-hmm.
stuff
right.
like that.
And then you can just ask them. And, you know, it's always fun for people who are kind of observing, because they're like, how did you know to ask that question? I'm like, well, they put it in my mouth. I just had to like spit it
right.
out. You know?
Yes, exactly. People will often say the same thing. They'll go, how did you know to ask that? It's like, well, you just said it. And I used to say that to people. Well, you just said that. But of course, they were completely unconscious of it. And so I've learned not to say that, because it actually makes them uncomfortable.
Totally. Totally. This is more like when I communicate with the clinicians that are hanging out with me afterwards. But yeah, I agree. That can be an awkward conversation for patients too. But truthfully, you know, once you have a strong relationship with somebody, it's pretty clear that they're comfortable with that. But if you don't, if they're kind of like a newer patient, like you're saying, where you're like pulling teeth, and then suddenly it clicks, I usually, you know, just it's, you know, the easy throwaway answer is, oh, you know, everything's connected in Chinese medicine. And this is sort of the next logical step. Or, you know, they talk about this in the classics, or, you know, throw one of those five things that we say to everybody. And it's like, oh, cool. And then that kind of like shuts down the questioning, right? The more I think about it, as we're talking, I think this is what like great pulse taking is, right? When you are so deeply connected, I took a pulse class with like a 2-weekend course with Lonnie Jarrett. When you're so deeply connected, and he sits with people for like 40 minutes sometimes, right?
That's a long time.
I know. I think he talked about it when you guys spoke, but yeah, it was like watching him do it. I was like, this is exhausting. And I told him that. I'm not going to pretend. I'm like, this is never going to fit into my practice.
I would be asleep in 10 minutes if I was...
Me too. It was tough. We were doing, I'm like, still, I'm like, now my wrist hurts and my elbow hurts. You know? It's kind of like the first time you meditate for an hour. You're like, this is garbage. Who does this shit? You know? Right. and then you kind of start to figure it out, but you don't necessarily do it all the time, which is kind of where I'm at. But yeah, I think there's something that happens as you continue to, like, how is it that they can elucidate this information from just touching your fingers on a blood vessel, right? External to the body, even. You know, I think that's where the resonance really happens, where as you continue to kind of, you know, hold space for them, you're almost, this is a nonverbal kind of communication, I think, that happens, and suddenly you're clicked in with them. I'd love to ask Lonnie about that, or maybe better pulse takers than I am, truthfully. I'd love to ask them if that's kind of what they're feeling, because I don't think it's as mechanical as like, and you feel this little slippery thing here, and that equals, you know, they were born with a cord around their neck or something, right? I think there's more to it than that.
I suspect there is. You know, and I suspect, too, that anyone who is just plain skilled in what they do, they'll be able to get this information. I remember when I was first in school, we had one teacher, a Japanese teacher, and he got a lot of his information from palpation. You know, he just put his hands on people and he'd, like, get stuff. And then Steve Clavey came to visit at our school. And Steve is not much of a hands-on palpatory guy, but Steve knows how to talk to people. And like in an interview, he was like a Jedi just by talking, right? And so it's like, it doesn't matter what your thing is that gets you connected, as long as you have a way of getting connected. It could be the pulse, it could be palpation, it could be the way you talk. Maybe you've got some other thing that works for you.
Totally. I think that's a really great point, because this is a big part of my interview process too. I try to assess, you know, how comfortable they make the patients feel. And it can be hard, because a big part of that is just the communication and a good talker and asking the right questions and stuff like that. But there are people who do really, really well without having that skill set, right? Who really do rely more on palpation or on pulse taking particularly, right? You're 100% right. You got to know you. And that's, I think, going back to this concept of, you know, the failure in the first 5 years, or that feeling of failure, I think that people try to put themselves in a box that they don't fit into. And I ask this of people all the time when I'm doing kind of initial conversations with them about potentially coming to work for us. I'm very explicit about how we practice and what we do. And I'm very, very clear about, this is not for everybody, right? If you want to open your own practice, work a couple days a week, you know, have a yoga studio there, do community style acupuncture, that's phenomenal. If you're practicing medicine with integrity, please do it. You know, that is amazing. And we need more people like you, right? If you want to work within this particular model, this is what we offer. This is how we operate. You know, big part of it is teamwork, because you are going to be collaborating. You are going to be sharing patients. And that means you have to have humility as well, which candidly, I think you need if you're going to be a practitioner of this medicine anyway, but you might figure that out later on your own.
this has been my experience. Uh-huh. That it will be beaten into you eventually.
Well, here's the deal. I can't remember if we talked about this last time we chatted. I think that you are working with the most sophisticated system that exists, period. Right? So if you're not humble then you're going to miss out on a lot of stuff, right? If you think you know everything, good luck, bro. That's not how it works. This is far more sophisticated than any religion plus science can ever put together.
Right? Well, not only that, but here's something that I, again, talking about getting it beaten into you. When things would go well, it'd be like, oh, good, this is working. I'm getting it to work. It'd be like, you know, look at me. All right, I got this shit. Look at this. I can do this. Inevitably, something bad would happen after that. I mean, almost every time, whenever I would be like, oh, yeah, I got this. Now watch this. It just wouldn't work. I mean, almost every single time.
Yeah. Do you think that's you or do you think that's everyone? That's what I wonder. I'm like, is this just my karmic luck? I wonder. I'm going to start asking people. I need you to ask people too.
we can start asking people.
Yeah. Because I feel the same way too. Yeah.
You've had the same experience. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So here's what I learned to say to people. Instead of going, oh, that's good. That's great. Let's keep doing this. I learned to use the words, ah, nice. I'm cautiously optimistic.
Yeah. I'm painfully optimistic. I have troubles saying that, especially, you know, I work a lot with fertility and the way I see it is, you know what, let's go full head heart into it. And if it works, it works. And if it doesn't, it wouldn't have worked either way, right? It's not going to hurt you anymore. But at least you had this joy of this potential. So I don't love that cautiously optimistic term. I get it. I hear what you're saying. For me, I just say, great. It looks like this is awesome. You know, we were able to connect at this level today. This is exactly where we wanted to be, you know, and I say that a lot. This is exactly what I wanted to see, right? That doesn't mean like, I'm going to knock it out of the park every day, right? Like, that doesn't happen.
I like that. This is what I was liking to see. See, I think part of that cautious optimism comes from, I actually am more like you. I am wildly optimistic. I'm the kind of guy who's like, well, what could go wrong? And then I find out and I'm willing to. I mean, my optimism gets me overscheduled. My optimism gets me overcommitted. My optimism gets me into all kinds of trouble. Thank goodness for that. It's been a great life because of it. And there, you know, there can be the downside of, oh, now I'm a little bit over my head. Mainly I say that cautiously optimistic as a reminder to myself. Glad that things are going the way they are. This is great. Isn't acupuncture wonderful? I don't want to set them up for, oh, we completely knocked it out of the park. Your life has been transformed. This next treatment will do exactly the same. And the reason for that is because after someone has had a transformative experience, it's very, very difficult to get another one right after it. The biggest impediment to your experience of oneness with God was your last experience of oneness with God.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
Totally. I mean, it's addiction, right? You know, it's like you get this amazing high and then you're like, well, I need to get the next high. And, you know, and that's how addicts become addicts. Obviously, acupuncture addicts, I'm not as worried about as maybe heroin, but I think it's the exact same neural pathway.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just want to give a nod to that caution, but it.
Yeah.
And for me, it also circles back to, there's a lot that we can learn when we have a good clinical encounter.
Absolutely.
This helps to build confidence.
I absolutely agree. The other piece of that, you know, when I say like, this is exactly what we want to see, it's always housed under the fact that it's not like you just turn a corner. It's nothing is binary or purely binary, right? Nothing is just yin and yang. It's yang within yin. It's yin within yang, right? And my patients have the understanding already, like, this is exactly what I want to see. And then I start talking to them about, these are some other things that could come up both ways. So it is, it's not like pure optimistic, like it's all roses from here, man. This is it. You're smooth sailing.
Smooth sailing.
You're gonna name all
your
children
life
after me. You know,
yeah. Happily ever after.
Exactly. I'll never see you again. You know, like, no, absolutely not. But yeah, so I agree. I think you have to mix realistic reality with optimism.
Mm-hmm. Okay, it's funny. So you mix that in your own way as well.
Absolutely. You have okay. to. No question about that.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I was reading that Michelle Obama book, and she talks about how, I don't know if you've read Becoming, but I would recommend listening to it. I think her voice is pretty awesome. But anyway, she talks about how Barack was exactly the same way. So optimistic that he would try to jam too many things in a day. And he would, you know, he's like, yeah, I'll be there in like 15 minutes. And then an hour later, and I was like, oh, wait, that's me. Okay, that's good. So I'm not just being, you know, like disrespectful of people's time. It's like, no, I think that I can do all these things. And so let's just do it. And then suddenly, you know, 15 minutes behind or 20 minutes behind or something. So it was nice to hear that he does that too, at least. Made me feel better. It's nice to hear that you do that too, actually.
Well, I do that. My wife has pointed out to me, I finally got it. And in fact, it's changing how I do things in a way. But I'm finally getting it that when I say, oh yeah, in 10 minutes, I mean a half an hour. And when it's just me doing my own thing, okay, that's one thing, and I'll deal with those consequences. But when I'm working with other people and I say I'm going to do something and then I'm an hour late, oh, now I need to become a little bit more realistic.
Yeah, because no, totally.
You know, so there is that balance. On the other hand, I would rather be the guy that has a little too much to do than like, oh, what's on Netflix? There's nothing good on Netflix. You know, that kind of boredom.
Me too. I'm definitely that doer person for sure. My wife is the same way too. She knows. She knows what 10 minutes means in reality. So thankfully.
They know us so well. Yes,
exactly. And we're, you know, I think, you know, a strong relationship, you're kind of the same person in some ways too, right? So it's like, I'm not letting her down because she's like me, right? But I'm letting other people down. But of course, you need to have that balance.
You got
to
work with that. So yeah. So it's there's the confidence stuff that we get from nailing it. Or maybe we're not nailing it, but we're part of a field that we're in. And something's happening, and we get fortunately to be along for the ride, which is a beautiful thing. It seems to me that a lot of other confidence-building things come from when stuff goes off the rails. And there's actually a big lesson. Those lessons are a lot more painful, and it's much more difficult to stay present with and to really harvest the thing to learn from that.
That's where you really want to focus your energy, right? Because when someone's like, I feel phenomenal, you're not going to suddenly be ungrounded and blown away and like start crying or something, right? But it's when people say, I felt much worse this past week and I don't know if this is going to work out, where it's kind of like, you know, you feel your eyes widening and you're like, don't widen your eyes. You know, you have to quickly catch yourself. And that's where I think that having this, whatever practice works for you from a grounding perspective, is really, really essential. This just happened to me a couple weeks ago, and I mean, I feel very blessed that this doesn't happen to me very often, but I also feel blessed that it does happen, and it usually happens in front of somebody I'm training.
Great, so they get to get a lesson,
so they
huh?
get to see it, totally. Again, when you're actually really humble in what you're doing, like I'm very comfortable in sharing all my failures. The way I train most of my folks is to teach them all the things I fucked up so that they don't have to do it. You know, like, here, let's, you know, jump past all these things. I always say, I want you to learn like 5 years worth of practice in 6 months kind of thing. Right. But yeah, this happened a couple weeks ago, and really hyper kind of critical person. And, which makes it even harder because it's like those are the harder ones to sell almost in some ways. And of course, it's not selling, but you know what I mean.
Well, you want them on board with the process so they can be
totally, helped. Totally, totally. So I'm sitting back and just kind of taking it in. And I'm like, okay, I can do two things. I can have this go straight to my ego, which is garbage, but which is what happens too often, right? So we really need to work on that. Or I can start diagnosing it. Something went wrong. Okay, so how is this any different if they caught a cold, right? Is it my fault they caught a cold? No, I didn't sneeze on them and they got a cold. I told them to wear their scarf when they went outside, right? So how is it any different? Did I really cause this? I probably had something to do with it, but I'm not the only, you know, I'm not the be all and end all. I'm not the be all and end all in fixing them. I'm not the be all and end all in making them worse, right? So I think recognizing your place in this process and remembering, okay, even if they think, oh, well, everything was fine until I saw you kind of thing. Sometimes you have to remind yourself that's not true. And then you have to remind them that it's not true without disrespecting them, right? So it's like, okay, so that happened. I'm so sorry you felt that way. Let's figure out what's going on, right? Boom. Or you could be like, oh my God, are you okay? Like, I'm so sorry I did that to you. Like, that's not going to get you anywhere, right? And right away, you can hear it in my voice. You're shaking a little bit. Like, you're not grounded. You're not rooted. You're not present for them. You know, you can't meet anxiety with anxiety.
Well, yes, meeting anxiety with anxiety is a surefire way to not be helpful to anybody in that moment. You know, at the same time, I have I've lately been working with a form of acupuncture that really has some firepower. And so I have had some situations where people came back and I did screw them up. I did make them worse. And what I've learned from that is to be able to say, yeah, I thought it was like this. The reactions that you had tell me that hypothesis was incorrect. Because again, you use it as diagnostic information. Oh, that was really wrong. Well, the opposite is actually what's true. This was not heat. It was false heat. There's actually cold, right? Or something like that. and to just name it. And then saying, here's what we're going to do about that. And I think that can actually build trust when you show up with that.
Absolutely. That's exactly what happened with this particular patient, is that I said, okay, well, the fact that you had this reaction tells me there's more of something that I thought was there, but I didn't realize just how much there is. Good. This is really good information for me.
Super helpful, absolutely.
Like, help me give you a more balanced treatment, something that's more specific to you. This is great. And then let's keep an eye on it. Let's pay attention to X, Y, and Z. So now I'm bringing them into the equation too, but totally owning it. I wasn't like, I had nothing to do with that. Come on. It was probably because of this, this, and that. I always do like to remind them that I'm only one piece in their life. Right? In fact, I'm like in their lives for about 40 minutes, a week.
And everybody's on their best behavior.
Yeah, totally. It was funny. She said to me, she said, I didn't tell you this last week, but I'm really anxious. And I just kind of smiled. I'm like, I appreciate you, feeling comfortable being honest, but truthfully, your body told me, and so did your pulse. So I treated you as such, but thank you for feeling comfortable to open up. I was like, oh, that's so sweet that you thought you could hide that though. That's what I'm thinking in my head. I'm like, really? Would somebody not think you're anxious? Okay. There's a lot of strength from being, coming from a place of humility with that stuff too, and just being open to learning, right? If you see this as, oh, this is another layer to the puzzle, or, okay, so yeah, if we're not stoking the fire, if we're not shifting something, what are we even doing? Getting a strong reaction, positive or negative, is always good data, but you have to see it as such, right? And I think that requires you to look at a patient as and their health journey as a journey, as a trajectory. It's not one time. It's multiple times. It has to be, for the most part. And because of that, that you're going to be tweaking one way or another till you get it right. I always think about, when I passed my driver's test, when I was doing my parallel parking, it took me, probably 8 times going back and forth to finally wedge in there. Now I live in Chicago. I parallel park like a boss, right? And I have a big old car and it doesn't matter. You just have to wedge in. Okay, now let's shift it this way, let's shift it that way. And until you finally are where you want to be, right? And then once you're where you want to be with that, onto the next thing. What else are you working on, right? There's always something else.
There is always something else.
Yeah.
I don't think that process ever stops.
No, I hope not.
Yeah. So back to that first 5 years for a moment, because, this just seems to be such a thing in our profession about how many people wash out after 5 years. Actually, I was talking to a guy who's a business consultant. He'll be on the podcast here soon. I was asking him, we've got this thing about acupuncturists not making it, and it's a big thing in our profession. And he goes, well, when small business in general, 80% of them are out of business in 5 years. 80%.
Yeah. I mean, just look around your neighborhood. Something new pops up, see how long it sticks around, right?
Exactly. So I'm curious, because you've been in practice on your own. You're now working, in this larger dynamic as well, which we'll get into a little bit here later. What is it that you think people need to learn in that business sense in their first 5 years? What is it that, it's almost like we're going through this transformation that no one told us that we're going to have to go through to figure out how we are in the world running our own show.
Right. I think so many things. I feel like I could talk about this for days, but I'm going to have to do part 3. But I think one thing that I really think is important is to be realistic, to have this balance of optimism and realism, right? This is what happens a lot. I remember I've talked to a couple other people who teach practice management type courses. I remember having this conversation with Lauren Brown. He teaches one up in Canada. And people say, okay, well, you need to ask people, how many days do you want to work a week? They say 3 days. How much do you want to make? $100,000. Okay. How many rooms do you want to run? Just 2 rooms. Okay. He's like, so let's just do some math. Right. That means you need to charge something like $400 a treatment or something like that, right? So, starting with a little healthy reality, but then also pushing sort of your boundaries, because you have to recognize that if our lives revolved just around the viewpoint that we had, we would have really sad lives, right? So there's so many things we just don't see. So you have to be open to the things that you don't see. I think people pigeonhole themselves sometimes, and they say, well, this is what I'm passionate about. So this is the only thing I'll ever do. And they lose sight of the potential of growing in a different way. I think you have to come into it with an open heart and just understand that you never know who's going to come your way. I remember I used to get on my wife about this because she loves women's health and fertility. That's her jam. She's like, I'm never going to treat pain. I'm like, oh, sweetheart, you're going to treat pain. Yeah, you're going to do it because they're going to come in for pain and then quickly they're going to want to get pregnant, right? But that's, you know, that's just what people know and we have to be honest about that. So if you make these kind of, anyway, anytime I say never, it always happens. It's just the way it is. And that's, I think that's how
world is. I know I'm asking for it. If I say the word never, I am asking for it.
Totally. Yeah, it's going to hit me fast. That's why I'm wondering, is that just us, Michael, and other people like us, or is it everyone? I don't know. The world is very clear with its messages. It's just a matter of if I decide to listen to them, right?
Well, I think that thing about never, at least in my experience, it's because there's something in me that is a little bit immature, perhaps, or not completely formed, or just somehow not ripe at this point. And so rather than work on that, or rather than confront that that's there, I just go, you know, I'm just going to wall it. I'm just not going there. But it really is an invitation to open up something that is not really matured yet.
I think that's another thing to think about too, right? When I think it does reflect a little bit of insecurity, and you can choose to, you know, hide it, or you can choose to confront it. Truthfully, the world forces me to confront it, like it or not. So now I'm trying to get ahead of the game and not get smacked in the face with it. But truthfully, yeah, absolutely. That's without question. That's what happens. Yeah. So being open, I think, to new possibilities and permutations of what could possibly happen is super important. I think the other piece is knowing your limits. So, you know what you're good at, know what you're not good at. So I'm lucky enough that when we walked out of school, within 3 weeks, my wife and I had our practice. You know, it's a sweet little shop, had our herbal pharmacy. Why? Because we're both big herb nerds. So we're like, this makes sense for us. Let's have an herbal pharmacy. And one room and then a front room, kind of, you know, it's like sweet little office. I knew that she loved to write and I knew that I hate writing. Great. Guess who's writing all the copy on the website? I knew that she hated computers and I love computers and that's how my mind works. So guess who created our EMR? Me, right? So that kind of worked from those levels, but then we weren't business people. Well, my ex is a business person. And so she connected me with business people. And then we went to SCORE, which is like a bunch of essentially like retired business folks who just donate their time to do business, get, you know, business ideas and stuff like that.
Did you get some good help there?
We did. I mean, just things that we just wouldn't have thought about. And I think that, you know, we do have business classes in school and I think that they do what they can with the time they have, but there's only so much you could do, right? And if nothing else, she gave us a couple really good pointers that, you know, shifted, you know, we hadn't even thought about, like, you know, joining our Chamber of Commerce. There was no other acupuncturist in our Chamber of Commerce. They're like, what's acupuncture, right? Perfect. Now we get to put ourselves in that uncomfortable position, which for me was, I was like, I'm never going to speak publicly. Yeah. Look at my life now. Right? Like, damn it.
Well, and being the only acupuncturist in a Chamber of Commerce, it gives you access to people that may not know about acupuncture. Those are the people you want to talk to.
Totally. Right? And this is Lincoln. This is, we're in Lincoln Park. Lincoln Park is one of the richest neighborhoods in the country, certainly one of the richest ones in the city. The potential was incredible and it absolutely transformed our practice just being involved with it. And, you know, so, and even if there are other acupuncture, it's okay, because truthfully, when we opened our practice, we wanted a location that was convenient to us, that was convenient to patients. And the energy of the space was warm, right? So obviously it's maybe less tangible. But you have to be thoughtful about that. You want your energy to be comfortable there. You don't want to hear honking horns and stuff like that, which is not easy to find in Chicago, right? So it has to be well, like, insulated. And, you know, you want it to be physically warm. That's important for me too. The treatment rooms are about 10 degrees warmer than when you walk out in the hallway in all of our clinics, right? I have that TDP lamp on the whole time. I want you to be hot. I want those pores to be open. I want your mind to be open, right? You know, things like that. You know, does it feel right for you? Don't just jump into a space because it's easy. Oh, and my teacher has it. This place open. I'm going to go work there. You want it to feel like a home to you, or else it won't be a home to your patients, right? So thinking about those things, I think, is important. The last piece, I think, is, yeah, like finding people who can kind of support and fill in the gaps. We can't do everything. And that's, I think, where a big people fail because they just burn out because they're trying to do everything. If you're not good at marketing, find somebody who is. Just do it. Just find somebody who can help you with it. You know, give you ideas. That doesn't mean pay somebody thousands of dollars to run your Instagram necessarily. But maybe it does if you really trust them. But I think that, you know, being really clear about delegating and being comfortable delegating and being okay with them making mistakes because you would have made them too. I think that's a really important piece. People try to do it all by themselves. And this medicine was never built by one individual person. Don't tell me that the Shang Hanlin was written just by Zhang Zhongjing. Give me that. You know, it's not true.
Oh my goodness.
He didn't work by himself, right?
You are totally going against the orthodoxy here.
Come on. No, we can't do it alone. It's not just yin. It's not just yang.
The Nei Jing was written by a bunch of people.
Of course. Yeah, but you think like Zhang Zhongjing worked by himself? He didn't have 17 disciples following him around?
I think Zhang Zhongjing had his, this stuff is like lost in the, you know, the mists of time. But what I have experienced just by being a human living on the planet, there's a lot that we do that's ours to do, but we can't do it without the support and without the influence of all kinds of other people. You know, it's like we do it ourselves, but we don't do it by ourselves.
Exactly. That's kind of what I mean, right? Obviously, maybe he probably didn't even write it down, let's be honest, because I'm sure he had a scribe to do it. It sounds a lot sexier to have him be this emperor that's on this pedestal by himself. But who put him on that pedestal, right?
We did.
Exactly. There had to be somebody else. You're not an emperor unless you have peons to you know, in your empire, right? You're not an emperor if there's no empire. I was listening to one of the podcasts you did. I can't remember her name, but she was talking about benevolence and that definition of, if you remember that when she was talking about when looking at the character and how it's like Ren on one side and then it's two on the other side and how you need more than one. I probably listened to it 4 times and I fully blame not sleeping well because of having a young child that I can't remember all the details. And that's why I had to listen to it 4 times. But I love that idea. It's so true. This concept of benevolence, that's sort of my word for 2020, I think.
Was Brenda Hood. Yes, I remember asking, because that's a really weird character. I mean, it was weird until she explained it and then I understood it. But I've been looking at that damn character for, you know, 20 years. It's like, how did they get benevolence out of that? But it was right in front of me.
Yeah, really interesting. But I think that's exactly right. You know, you're not going to do it alone. And even if you have a business partner, you still need more than that, right? You know, I do think that if you want to open your own practice, that's totally legit. I think that's great. But I think that you need to be very cognizant of the fact that if you don't have support from others, and that means people to bounce ideas off of, and from a business perspective, but also a patient perspective, you're not going to succeed. You can't do it all on your own. And that's what happens. People burn out and then they start to panic, right? Then the kidneys get hit and all of a sudden it's fear, 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 which makes everything close, right? Their hearts are closing and they're getting stuck in this fear position. And then they start doing other things that dissipates their chi, you know, let me just bartend or let me just work to get a little extra money. Well, then this, I actually make more money bartending. Maybe I should add another shift, right? And now suddenly you're moving away from your Tao. If this is your Tao, and maybe it's not, that's another thing. Right? I had no choice in this being the medicine that I was going to practice and this being my life. I fought it for years. I didn't know what I was fighting, right? But I fought it for sure. But
tell me about that. How did you fight it? What was going on? How did you fight it? What was happening?
Well, I mean, you know, in undergrad, I was really in hard sciences and everyone wanted me to work in a lab and get a PhD. And I was like, no, I'm too normal. I need to work with humans. So I was like, I'll just go to med school. And that's, you know, that's what you do when you're a scientist, but you want to talk to people. It just never felt like a home to me. I was never at home in med school. And I was like, well, that's just because it's challenging. And this is just the hardest thing I've ever done. And that's why this isn't for me. So I just kept pushing against the grain and against who I was. And I mean, to the point where I was starting to get, you know, physical manifestations of it, right? That's when I encountered anxiety for the first time. That's where I started noticing things that were so anti who I am, which are things like, you know, not wanting to see people and like isolate myself and things like that. I'm like, hold up, this is not me. I'm painfully, like, I want to be around people. I'm a social human being. That's why I'm married to someone who's not super social, so we can kind of balance each other out, you know. That's not the only reason why, obviously.
In any good relationship or marriage, those kind of balances tend to show up. which is super helpful for us. And of course, drives us crazy about our partner.
Totally. I'm like, come on, just go out. Let's go a little longer. But what are you going to do? But yeah, so, you know, I kept fighting it there. I was like, you know what, let me just take some time off and just reset. And then, so I reapplied. I was like, maybe I just need to go to a different school. So I reapplied to different schools. And right before I started was when I got my first acupuncture treatment. And it's because I didn't have, none of the options that were given to me were things that I wanted to be a part of. So I didn't want to have to take meds for the rest of my life. I didn't want anything like that. And I kind of fell, I would say I fell into acupuncture. I went to go get a massage and they're like, you should try acupuncture. I'm like, oh, okay, why not? And of course I didn't fall into it. It's, you know, everything was leading me in this direction. I didn't study quantum mechanics to practice Western medicine. There's nothing quantum mechanical about that medicine, right? I studied quantum mechanics to practice a medicine that lives in that world, right? So that's kind of what I was saying. Like I kept pushing myself away from it. And then finally I got this treatment that wasn't, you know, I didn't have a connection with the clinician. It was an ugly space. Like, he gave me bad information. You know, placebo effect was 1,000% out the door, but I felt better in a way that I'd never felt before. And my symptoms disappeared where nothing else could make them disappear for longer than a couple hours. And that's when I was like, all right, fine.
Here it is.
Where's the nearest school? And then I did a little bit of research and, you know, found Pacific College, and that's where I am right now.
You know, we're so fortunate sometimes to have the troubles that we have because they lead us to all kinds of possibilities that we otherwise never would have opened up on our own.
Yeah. And that's where I think the optimism balanced with the realism is important, right? When you see things go wrong, when somebody doesn't show up in your office and you call them, they don't answer the phone and they completely ghost you, you can see that as two things. Like, you can get mad at them and be like, oh, I suck. I'm horrible at this. And what a jerk, or, you know, reactive and say, oh, what a jerk. Like, you know, they weren't ever going to get better. They never wanted to get better, right? You can blame it on them. Or you can be like, okay, what could I have done differently? Right? You can own what you can own, and that's it. And then how can I learn from this? Great. This isn't like, thank you for giving me this opportunity to learn from this, right? you can, you know, that's where practicing gratitude, I think, can really come in handy too. Like, oh my gosh, thank you for pointing out the fact that, like, I could have said that differently. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'll do it again differently.
Well, one of the things I found too, I simplified my practice a few years ago. I got rid of the larger clinic in the rooms and other practitioners and all that. And I work out of my home. I got this separate space. It's really sweet. I answer my own phones. It's simple. I just made it simple. I didn't want to have the complexity of all that other stuff. And one of the things I've found is over time, I can talk to someone on the phone and I can know in 30 seconds or not if it's a good fit or not. I just know it. Because I've had enough people that didn't show up, or they canceled three times and then, you know, didn't show up. Or, I mean, there's certain things, there's tones of voices. Here's one that I learned, and this has been so helpful. Never let a wife or a girlfriend make an appointment for the guy in her life. Don't do it, because he probably won't show up. And if he does, he's only going to show up once and waste everybody's time. So if he can't make his own damn appointment, he's not coming in here.
I agree with that. The only kind of corollary I would say is that if they bring them in, then it's okay, right? Because in that first appointment, and you know, they actually come in and get the treatment, hopefully we can start working on their will so that they can kind of be their own human being and they can see the benefit of it. But I agree. It's still, I mean, the delta is always a lot larger for those folks. I 100% agree. Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth to that. I think what I love about that statement and kind of looking at your trajectory of practice, which really goes back to the, you know, this conversation of, you know, what's happening in those first 5 years, you shifted the way you practice because you have shifted as a practitioner, right? And so you're listening to sort of what resonates with you, what works for you, and you're paying attention to that, and then you're adjusting as necessary. And that's where people fail, I think, oftentimes, or they feel like they're failures, is that they don't listen to themselves and they do what they think they should do. And then when things aren't working, they just keep pushing it. It's like a bad investment. You got to let go at some point. It's okay. You know, you're not a bad person. If this particular model didn't work, but if your why is still, and your Ming is still kind of in that same direction of, I'm going to be a practitioner of this medicine, then we can look elsewhere. I hire a lot of people who have been in practice on their own. They, in their experience being on on their own, they realize that's not what I ever wanted. I didn't want to have to deal with all this stuff on my own. I just want to have my hands on patients. I just want to continue to learn. I want to challenge myself, and I want someone to hold me accountable. Welcome to Align Modern Health, because that is how we roll. You will be held accountable. You have to do your notes. It's crazy, I know. And I will ask questions, not because I'm like, that's wrong. I'm thinking more like, tell me more about that. I hadn't thought about it that way. Let's talk about it. And you have to be comfortable with people, you know, actually questioning what you're doing. You're not 100% right necessarily. Or maybe you are, and it's just something that people don't understand and you can share it. But if you can't explain it to another practitioner, how in the world are you going to explain it to a patient, right?
And are you actually even explaining it to yourself?
Right. Exactly. And that's, you know, that's the other piece that kind of all ties in with this too, is like having that integrity, right? And that has to fall in line with every single thing you do. You know, integrity when you answer the phone, it's like, absolutely, I can get you pregnant. Integrity when you're creating a treatment plan and say, I need to see you 3 times a week without even knowing what's going on with them. Right. Or integrity in saying like, you know what, I think we need to send you out to see somebody else. I think that we need a little more diagnostic testing. Doesn't make me a bad clinician. It makes me a really good one. They tend to like it. They tend to like it when you give them a good referral, actually. Right. So it's not just great results from you. Some of our best referral sources are our patients that we didn't have great success with, but we sent them to the right person. Right. Because now they trust us and they trust that it's not just about, well, I can do everything. And if, you know, building my own practice, it's about you as a patient. It's patient-centered care, right? It's not clinician-centered care.
A lot of us want to have our own practice and we're looking to go down that road, but there are plenty of people that would like to have a job, you know, similar, you know, working for a company similar to yours, right? The kind of clinic that you have. And I think those are in some ways very different kinds of people, right? Some of us like to do our own gig and don't tell me what to do. And others are, wow, I love that I can just go in and do my job and, you know, and then go home and, you know, I'm done at the end of the day. But it sounds like it takes a particular kind of skill set. There are other skills that you've got to have if you're working for a larger concern, like the one that you manage. Tell us a little bit more for folks who do want to be working for someone else. How can they be better at bringing the kinds of things to an employer that would, number one, make them employable, and number two, a good employee?
Yeah, I think it really depends on the employer, truthfully. To me, the first and foremost, you need to be a phenomenal clinician who's constantly learning and constantly questioning, right? That's just not negotiable. That's table stakes. There are absolutely things that I expect that we're going to coach you on. There's no question about that. No one's perfect. You know, I'm far from that, certainly. So I can't expect other people to be. So you have to kind of start with that first and foremost, is you have to be a phenomenal clinician. But in order to really function in this kind of environment, you have to feel really confident in your abilities or be able to move to that point, right? Because you are going to be working and sharing patients with others. And so you need to be able to be comfortable asserting yourself when you think that maybe it makes more sense to do acupuncture more versus chiropractic or functional medicine or whatever. Be able to like be grounded enough in your understanding to say like, oh, I love that idea. Yeah, maybe I will refer them to you as well, so that we can kind of tag team in this situation. And underlying that is ability to work in a team, right? Having the humility and accepting that you can't do everything. And that doesn't mean that the medicine has failed this human being. It just means maybe that they're just going to get better faster working with somebody else in addition to working with you, or maybe taking a break from you and working with them and then coming back to you, that kind of thing. So if you have this mentality of I'm an island, like definitely not a fit here. If you kind of want to make your own rules and have zero sort of respect for, you know, some very, very subtle guidelines, then, you know, you're not going to fit in with us for sure. I'm a big proponent of practicing this medicine in any way, shape, or form, whether or not is something that I do, as long as there's a strong grounding in an evidence base in some way, shape, or form, right? So that means that you can't just say, oh, I really like this point. That's great. Why do you like it? You know, you have to have a treatment plan. You have to have a diagnosis, a strong diagnosis, and it has to be rooted in something that someone else can see too, right? I don't really practice a lot of the microsystems, for instance. I'm not telling people on our team that they can't practice them, but you have to be able to justify it, and you have to be able to modify if something's not working, That's all I'm saying. You know, if you're going to practice herbs with us, you better be NCCOM certified. It's not negotiable, right? Why? Because that's the baseline, examination. You know, it's really entry level. And if you don't have that, then how can I trust that you know at least very basic information about, okay, well, if, you know, they start having these symptoms, how am I supposed to, how am I supposed to adjust? How am I supposed to pivot from here? Is it just the wrong formula completely? Or can I just maybe add a little bit of this or add a different formula, that kind of thing, right? So having integrity in how you practice in every way. So knowing where you're kind of out of your bounds, right? You know, when you're a little over your head and being comfortable asking. And that's a big part of my job, actually, is, I have clinicians who are phenomenal clinicians, but, they're like, oh, I'm kind of stuck on this case. Let's talk about it. Great, let's talk about it. Having that humility to understand that you don't know everything and you're lucky enough to be surrounded by 20-some other clinicians who can help you with it. Every month we have a monthly meeting, and at the end of the meeting, I try my best to ensure that, like, we save some time to go over a difficult case. And it is just so much fun, right? Because we get all of our different opinions on things and all of our different experiences, and we've moved that patient forward, five steps. We save them 10 treatments, maybe, right? Because we're getting deeper into that the diagnosis than we could have maybe just on our own, right?
Yeah. I mean, this can be so helpful. I think this is something that's missing in a way in our profession. And part of the reason why it can be so difficult in the beginning, especially if you're on your own, in the conventional medicine world, you get on with your education, you do residency. There's a lot of support. There's a lot of oversight. There's a lot of kind of like showing your work. It's like, fine, okay, you got a solution. Show your work, like in a math class. Psychotherapists, even ongoing, I know people that have been doing psychotherapy for 20, 30 years, and they still do supervision and consultation groups and things of that nature. So there's a profession where people are exposing themselves to, here's something I don't know, here's a place I need help, to their colleagues to get some help. And I don't think we really have that so much in the acupuncture world. I mean, maybe Facebook is a kind of drive-by, but it's not that helpful. Yeah. Right? I mean, we really don't have that kind of a thing built in. It sounds like in the work that you're doing, in the company that you're in, that's built in. That can be a super helpful support. But for people that are trying to work it out on their own, it's like, how do we put ourselves in front of the help that we need so that we can be vulnerable with the stuff that we're not so good at yet?
Yeah, I love that you use that word vulnerability, because that's important too, right? This goes back to that concept of doing it alone and realizing that you can't do it alone. You have to have a community, right? And that could be your classmates from school. That could be, the other acupuncturists on the other side of town. It could be a community on Facebook. I know there's some really great teachers who do like mentorship programs and stuff. Like Deborah Betts does one for like women's health and fertility, stuff like that. You can do things like that. I think Sharon Weisenbaum's like courses are really, there's a heavy element of kind of support in that, and you're part of a community. I think that's great, but you have to be a part of community, whatever it looks like. Or maybe you don't want to hang out with other acupuncturists. That's fine, I guess. but find some other clinicians who are seeing similar things. If you're super into Lyme disease, hang out with other Lyme people, whatever it is. But you have to have a community, because you need to bounce ideas off of other people. You have to. And when you're stuck, you can't just like, oh, I'm just going to dig in deeper and I'll find it within myself. It never works. You can't force it. That's the way, right? You can't force it. It has to just come. That's a big one. I remember when my wife and I first graduated and started practicing, we wrote a little article about finding a community and how we thought it was just such an important piece to being successful. And I'm lucky that I'm married to an acupuncturist. So she stuck with me, and she stuck listening to, answering my questions and talking about cases and stuff, which is great. We have so many other resources. Also, all my mentors are part of my community, right? You're not doing it alone. You can't. And they never did it alone either, right? Talk to the greatest people out there. They have their teachers. There's not one podcast of yours I've listened to where somebody hasn't mentioned a couple of their teachers. That's their community. And so even if you have to reach back to your professors, hopefully they're going to be open to it, and they'll talk to you. So yeah, I think that's so important. I think that's one of my favorite parts of what we do, is that we have this community that we can all kind of nerd out on Chinese medicine stuff together. You know, sometimes with wine, sometimes without it.
Well, and we help bring each other along.
Exactly. Part of community is holding people accountable too, right? So when you start to falter from that integrity, it's other people are going to be like checking you, right? I realized early on in life that the people that I loved and who loved me were the ones who were calling me on my shit and were holding me to being the most integrative, have the most integrity I possibly could have. Right. The people who are like, yes, people, I don't trust them.
Right. Right. If you can't get a no, you can't trust the yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
I had a guy that I worked for years ago, way before I became an acupuncturist. I was working in IT at that point. This guy was a gem. He was just a mensch in every way. I'm this young guy who, like, when I got the job that he gave me, I did not have the ability to do it, but I had the desire to learn it. And that's why he hired me. And we were having a conversation about that at one point after I actually had a little more of the ability to do what I had set out to do. And he said, yeah, it's really important to give people a firm basis of support and firm challenge. And you can't just have one side or the other. Both are required if people are going to grow.
Absolutely.
And it's, I think it's absolutely true.
I love that. That's exactly how I operate, right? Yes, I'm the director. Yes, I'm their bosses, but I treat them like a coach does, right? It's like, I'm here to 100% support you, whatever you need. You text me about anything, anytime. I get texts all hours of the day and night, but you better believe I'm going to hold you accountable and I'm going to push you to be the best possible person that you can be, from what I can see, at least, right? I think I do have a talent in that I can see people's potential, and that can cause me trouble sometimes because I may try to pull someone along who's just not ready to come along yet, you know?
Well, you gotta wanna. You gotta wanna. And I think it's really helpful to any of us when there is someone outside of us who cares, who can see some potential that we have. We may not see it ourselves, or we may only glimmer it to some degree, but if there's someone out there who can see it and help us to dig it out, I mean, that is just such a treasure of a relationship to have in this life.
Yeah, I think we all got that from somebody at some point in our life.
Of course we did.
Yeah, hopefully from our parents, but probably other people too.
Yeah, hopefully from our parents. But if not, hopefully from some adult, responsible adult in the room who was able to see that and recognize that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. If you want to do it on your own, I think that's great. If that's your passion, if that's your dream, but you just need to make sure you still build these support systems around you so that you can still thrive and not feel burdened by the things that just have to get done. I remember I realized, you know, the way I kind of joined this company, it was interesting. They approached me and I was only a year out of school. I was practicing for a year. I was working at PCOM and they approached me because I was ahead of career services, and they were just asking because they wanted to hire acupuncturists. They want to ask about it and learn more about it. And it's like, great. You know, no one's hiring acupuncturists. Awesome. Well, you know, I'll send you a bunch of alumni. This is so cool. And then as we kind of got to know each other better, they're like, yeah, we want you to run this practice. And then we want you to hire people. And I was like, I don't know. I don't know if I have time. Right. And I kind of stepped back and thought about it and everything aligned. But it was funny because it was probably a couple weeks before this came up, I was thinking, I love folding sheets. I loved like doing our laundry and, you know, hauling. Like, I just love that sort of manual labor. I don't know what it is. I'm weird. I get it. But like, it was very zen to me, right? Like the folding and the unfolding and all that stuff. Like at that point in my life, it was just lovely. I think I was spending a lot of time with my nephews who were really young too. So I was folding their little socks and stuff like that, right? And about a week before they came and met me, I was thinking to myself, this is not that fun anymore. I don't love doing this anymore. And I started thinking, okay, I need to talk to Kate about getting a laundry service or something, because she's not going to do it. So that was on my checklist of responsibilities. So I was like, maybe, you know, I was like, I need to talk to her about it. And I never did. because this thing kind of came along. It's really interesting how that works out. But it reminded me, you know, like I put it out there that this is not something I wanted to do anymore. And I was, you know, fortunate enough for something else to come along. But I think there's a lot of people who just kind of stick with it and keep doing things that that feel like drudgery. But like, it shouldn't feel like drudgery. It's not supposed to be easy, right? We talked about that. But it should not feel like torture.
Yeah, sometimes there's a shift that's happening that we're actually asking for. And when it first shows up, it looks a lot like a lot of inconvenience or distress.
Mm-hmm. And that happens even when people, like, when they get approached to come work with us, you know, if their name came up from somebody else and we reach out to them, they're kind of like, what? No, I don't want, you know, that seems like a lot of responsibility. And it's kind of my job to suss out, like, is it because they're afraid of the responsibility, or is it because this just isn't a fit, right? And that's okay. It's like I said, this is not for everybody. Absolutely not. Some people with, you know, more insecurity, they're not comfortable taking any sort of feedback. You're going to have a rough time here, right? Because you're not working alone.
You know where else they're going to have a rough time? And maybe even a rougher time? In their clinic. Because
totally.
Because
patients aren't going to give you feedback.
We're going to get that feedback from our patients. And if we can't take it, right? And patients aren't looking to help us along. They're just looking to get better. Someone's working with you, you're looking to help them along, right? But when we get it in our clinics and we don't have that other support, it can be devastating. When we're getting the feedback that you're not being responsible here. I mean, we do have to take that responsibility.
Yeah. And I think it's a big mistake to just throw it back onto that person, right?
To throw it back on the patient?
Yeah.
Yes, it's a huge mistake. Are you kidding?
They're just, you know, they're intractable and you can't permeate them or whatever. They're not ready for it. Whatever. Like, no. Maybe they're not, but maybe you're not able to get them ready for it too, right? Take a little bit of ownership in this process.
I suspect blaming the patient never helps.
Suspect that's a quick way to be an unsuccessful clinician.
It's a quick way to be unsuccessful clinician.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really easy way to become a bartender.
Oh my God.
With, you know, student loan debt from, you know, some acupuncture school.
Well, Lamia, I can't believe another hour has gone by, hour plus. Always a blast to talk with you.
Totally. It's been absolutely lovely. I'm so happy that you are around kind of sharing your ideas, but also the experiences of other people to folks. I think this platform is really lovely. I pretty much only listen to your podcast now in the car, which annoys other people, but I don't care. Like, I'm sure there's something you can learn here too. But no, I really do appreciate it. And thank you for taking the time to speak with me. I think that the more people hear about successful people in this medicine, the more it can really sink in their heads that there's no reason why you can't be successful doing this medicine if this is what you're supposed to be doing. Right?
Yes. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah.